Great to get up to preach this morning. I've been in a very rich environment all week, the church live stream camp. I've heard some excellent preaching and been part of some wonderful worship and ministry. And this day just flows on the previous eight, I think. Have you had your coffee? Maybe some of you don't drink coffee. But as I was preparing to come here, just to step up to the lectern here, I thought, if you had a very emotionally orientated pastor, he might say, how are you all feeling? I'm not going to ask you that. So I'm going to come out with a big, meaty question, and then we're going to spend some time looking at that. Is your faith about what, your faith in God, is it about what happened in the past, about what's happening now, or what you believe will happen in the future? It can be all three, and rightly so. But often there's an orientation. The events, especially as described in the Bible, the great things God has done, the hope for the future and eternity, and of course, what God is doing now. Christianity is faith in Jesus as being the center of God's purpose. And it involves all three. Christ has died. Christ is risen. Is risen. Christ will come again. And yet, as I've already indicated, so often I find people are orientated one way. Huge energies are put into, say, the Bible accounts of what happened in the past. Huge energies are put into the shape of the future, discussing that. We don't do that much in this church, but millennialism is an example of that. They're both important, but Christianity is very much a practice of the now. Christ is risen. We are living now. We're not like you sometimes hear in the world, people say, this is not a dress rehearsal, this is life. In other words, this is all there is. No, there's more. And we live in this richness of looking back, looking forward, but it's very much about now. And that unpacks in many ways. In the Gospels, we hear these wondrous stories and right through the Scriptures about what God has done. But it's not primarily, we're not just looking back as if we're some sort of memorial society or as if our whole faith is based on the fact that, listen, Jesus did magical things 2,000 years ago, therefore, as if there's no connection with the present. Today, Jesus speaks into this. And for those of you who like languages, Alison, you said you're a language buff, there's going to be a little Hebrew lesson in this because Jesus does something very smart that speaks right into this in the text. And it's not at all obvious. So, we're in that gospel passage that was just brought to us by Rick. And as happens elsewhere in John's Gospel, there's a discourse, a big conversation, in which Jesus makes a great claim for himself. And the conversation around this is confused. Typical account of John about Jesus. Big conversation, big claim, and confusion. And by modern standards, Jesus would flunk communication 101. He would certainly not score in any society where it's thought that the communicator should always ensure everyone understands everything all the time. There's lots of confusion and misunderstanding, a richness beyond the people there. We have an example a few chapters earlier in chapter 4, Jesus with the Samaritan woman at the well of Jacob. On the theme of living water. Today, it's Jesus with a group of people who've been fed, and it's on the theme of bread. and him presenting himself as the bread of life. And in the passage, Jesus ends by making an I am claim. And I've mentioned, we've referred to them often, I am, as a sort of a pun. Yes, it's a humorous play of language with profound meaning. It has the name of God. I am the bread of life. Let those with discernment and the ability to understand what's been implied here understand that Jesus is associating himself with the very name of God in a way that the grammar of the language actually doesn't require. He's forcing the language to end up by making this, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger. Whoever believes in me shall not thirst. So within this discourse, various people engage Jesus over what he's saying. If you ever want to have a purpose to read the gospel, one of the things I go for is, how does Jesus engage people and how do they engage him? What's going on? What is the conversation? And I found three questions being asked in John chapter 6 in this passage. They go from very basic to quite deep. First one, Rabbi, when did you get here? And the background to this is they'd crossed around the lake or over the lake. They were searching for him. He had eluded them for some time. And they're just asking, ha, gotcha. Now, when did you actually get here? Simple question. Maybe it's a conversation starter. And it's in verse 25. A little bit further in verse 28, they ask a deeper question. A question about instruction. What must we do to be doing the works of God? They're inviting Jesus now to be a teacher and to give instruction on how to live. He's recognized, I think, as a man of God, as a rabbi, someone who has insight into how to live before the Lord. What must we do to be doing the works of God? Wonderful open question. And then a bit later, as Jesus gives a response to this, they then ask him, now, what sign will you do that we may see and believe you? What work will you perform? This last question is about credibility. Okay, what time you got here? Well, that's mildly interesting. What must we do to be doing the works of God? That's fairly interesting. But now, what sign can you give that heaven underwrites what you're saying to us? What indication can you provide that shows heaven is working through you? A typical Oriental question of the time. Paul would say later, Jews demand signs, Greek want wisdom. So the Jews, true to Paul's perception, they're not interested in subtle wisdom or philosophy. They want to see some action. They want to see something that only heaven can do. And they provide the question as this is a context to this question. You see, in the mind of a traditional society, the great ones are always prior. You will never be as good as your ancestors. Ancestors, that they're backward-looking people, and I don't mean backward in the sense of in any negative sense, but to be clear about who they are and what's true, what's real, they look back. And the stories of the ancestors and their walk with God is so important as the reference. And they say to Jesus, our fathers, your father, my father, the ones that we honor, ate the manna in the wilderness. And then they quote scripture, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. They're quoting Exodus 16, verse 4. So, we're asking for a sign. Here's the benchmark. our ancestors experienced, God gave them bread. That's the sort of sign we'd like. But you've done something like this on the other side of the lake. Let's see if you can do this now. The woman at the well played the same ploy. She was there at the well of Jacob, and Jesus was promising water, and she said, "Ah, come on, you're not going to surpass our ancestor Jacob, the one we revere as a hero of the faith." Yes, that's exactly what Jesus was going to do. John the Baptist echoes this sort of thinking too, very subtly, when he says, "The one coming after me, I'm not worthy to tie his sandals because he was before me." So he turns this on his head. He says, the one coming after me actually is greater than me because he was before me. Subtle stuff. Okay, so the point here is that this is the tradition, this is the question, this is how this, where this question's coming from, and Jesus is not going to comply. He's not going to tick the boxes on this. He's not going to be limited to the stories, by the stories or the legends of great ancestors and God's wonders in days past, worked through them. He is going to surpass this. Because as he knows, he is the apex of God's involvement with humanity. Everything prior has actually been a lead up to him. He knows that. But he's not going to spell that out in quite as simpler terms. So, that third question, a sign. Do something only heaven could do. And the standard is set is bread as God provided through Moses. And the scripture referenced. Now, the way that Jesus responds to this is so smart. It is so smart. If you study languages, I just think it's awesome. See, so often people, you can have a picture of Jesus. He's a lovely, lovely man, full of love, very kindly. But intellectually, he doesn't often get a lot of credit because he's God's son and he just does good things. Think about that after I've opened this up. So, where are we? Okay. So, we go to that text, Exodus 16:5. And Moses said to them, "It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat." And Jesus responds by saying, "Truly, truly, I say to you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven." Those of you who studied languages, what's going on here? There's a sentence with a past tense. God gave bread through Moses. And Jesus says, no, you're reading it wrong. No, it's in the present tense. God is giving you bread. Now, you can't pull that one in English or Dutch because the language is clear. But here's the background. The Hebrew around Jesus' day was written as a string of letters, consonants only, no gaps. So the language, that's how you had to learn to read Hebrew. And you had the advantage that the typical Hebrew word has three consonants. And that's how the language is structured. It's Semitic languages are all like that. They're spoken from the Sahara through to Malta. They all have this common pattern. So here you have strings of letters, no vowels. They were introduced about 500 AD. So the word, the verb that relates to giving, I'm not going to pronounce it because that would take you into one tense or the other, but the what you see on the right there are the Hebrew characters. An N, a T, and an N in the final form, as written in the Latin alphabet on the right. Now, it can be read several ways. They saw this text there, and they would have to interpret or assign a tense to it, and it could be either. They had always read it in the past tense. God gave. And you'll remember this word always because it's a name that pops up among us. And in the past form, it is Nathan. Nathan. Which literally is, in Hebrew, he gave. That's what it means. Our son is Nathaniel, which means El, God, he gave. For several years, I've been calling Nathan, Indian brother here, Nathan, because the same letters, but I thought, oh, that's a biblical name, but not so. Nathan is an Indian name as well, totally unrelated. So, Jesus reads it differently, and we'll go to the next screen. So, the reading of the other people there was Nathan. He gave, but Jesus puts different vowels in and brings it into the present tense. He is giving. So, same scripture. Talk about interpretation. Possible because the vowels are not there. This is classic rabbinic interpretation. The text always requires interpretation, but at this level, we're not familiar with. But the Jewish community at that time were. So it's the difference between past perfect, completed tense, and present continuous. Nathan or Nothane. Same consonants, different vowels. And Jesus expresses this and says, no, here's my reading. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives his life to the world. The bread is coming down. Now, it seems that those who were engaging Jesus who were impressed. This is smart. This carpenter from Nazareth, he's no slug. And it takes you back to, you know, when he was 12 and in the temple. It wasn't just that he impressed people in terms of who he was or who he related, but when you got down to sharp technical issues, Jesus was there. He knew his stuff and who he was in those scriptures. So people were impressed, if not touched, and they said, they got it. Sir, give us this bread. Always. Same shift as the woman at the well back in chapter 4. When she got it, give it to me. Now, some of you are from non-bread cultures. You may want to insert rice in here. Meat. Just the point is potatoes. What is the stuff, what is your staple food? What is it that you need every day to survive? They wanted that bread of heaven now. He'd shifted them from the past to the present. And Jesus responds now, beautiful the way he just moves this conversation forward. I am the bread of life, present. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. It's present and it's personal. No longer just an idea or a story. This is the incarnation now. He's standing there. This is the climax of the discourse. What do you say after that? Well, as the Americans put it, this is a classic come-to-Jesus moment. What might it mean for us here today? Well, the first thing I think is what I asked in the outset was, Jesus moves thinking about a historic basis back there into the present. It's all about Jesus. and receiving him as from God now, as your daily bread. One of the songs we sing occasionally, I don't know if we sing it here in church, but "You are the air I breathe." It's a bit of modern poetry to try and say just how essential it is. And we are all one breath away from death, aren't we? We start breathing, we keep breathing, and when we stop breathing, it's over. To amplify this image of the bread, Jesus as the breath, that's that intake of spiritual life. Because God is giving us bread continuously. He didn't just do something amazing, probably around 1400 BC, with the wandering tribes somewhere in the Sinai. That just establishes the metaphor. That just gets things, captures our imagination. And there's not much point in arguing, did it happen, did it not happen, what sort of bread was it, da-da-da-da-da. It comes into the present. God is giving us bread in daily installments, and we're taught even to pray for that. Big clue. Because he wants a relationship which is present, continuous, daily, ongoing. And so what I am pleading for out of this is a question I asked most months at council when council meetings kick off is, what is happening? What might we point to as God among us? What's significant or special to be seen? Because God didn't just work in 1400 BC or in the resurrection of the Lord 2,000 years ago. God is at work now. And what we have to do is open our peepers and be attentive to that, be looking for that. We are not just here paying tribute to the past in hope of the future. Paul says something that I thought speaks into this. This is from 2 Corinthians. Behold, now is the favorable time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. Now is when God is wanting to give us bread. And we need not just live in celebration of the past or anticipation of the future. And for church, one of the things I think that really means is church so often, in my experience, has been a bit like a memorial society. A place where people come to do what people do very easily is tell the stories, sing the songs, and that's all very good and we feel better. Or a place where people who have spiritual anxiety or fear of hell or something like that can find assurance. What about simply being a place where you receive from God in the now, where there's daily bread and the relationship with God is affirmed? There's a sign from heaven within us and among us. Could be a lot of crumbs on the floor. Could be quite different. And that's something I has captured my imagination, and I'm thinking through. Yes, we have traditions. Yes, there are great patterns established about and why things should be the way they are. But what if we were to start to think more about church has been a place where we receive our daily bread? Where would that take us? Something to talk about over coffee. But it's captured my imagination, and I'm thinking and reflecting about this. So, I hope what I've brought you is a picture about how smart Jesus is. If you're a linguist, it's there. And celebrated the present. This is the time when God, or Jesus, points to as when he wants us to receive bread from him. Life, stuff that sustains, stuff that carries us through. The food to build our bodies and be and do who we are. Let's take a moment to just let that settle and then we'll pray out of that. Is that okay? Good, because it is holiday time and we don't want to work too hard and it's probably about 30 degrees in here.